Good evening. New York death toll soars by nearly 4,000. The staggering numbers are among the highest in the world. And President Obama endorses his former vice president.
That kind of leadership doesn't just belong in our state capitals and mayor's offices. It belongs in the White House. And that's why I'm so proud to endorse Joe Biden for president of the United States. Choosing Joe to be my vice president was one of the best decisions I ever made, and he became a close friend. And I believe Joe has all the qualities we need in a president right now.
Prison Petri dish. Why aren't short timers being set free? And a city comes together every night at 7. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Tuesday, April 14th, 2020. New York City sharply increased its death toll due to the COVID-19 pandemic by more than 3,700 on Tuesday. Officials say they're now including people who had never tested positive for the virus but were believed to have died from it. The new figures are released by the city's health department. They drive up the number of people killed in New York City to more than 10,000. That increases the overall United States fatality rate by 17% to more than 26,000. Far more people have died in New York City on a per capita basis than in Italy, the European country with the most deaths. Former President Barack Obama endorsed Joe Biden on Tuesday. Although Obama didn't mention Trump by name, he did commend Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, adding, while Democrats might not always agree, they must unify to defeat Trump.
That kind of leadership doesn't just belong in our state capitals and mayor's offices. It belongs in the White House. And that's why I'm so proud to endorse Joe Biden for president of the United States. Choosing Joe to be my vice president was one of the best decisions I ever made, and he became a close friend. And I believe Joe has all the qualities we need in a president right now. Joe has the character and the experience to guide us through one of our darkest times and heal us through a long recovery. And I know he'll surround himself with good people, experts, scientists, military officials, who actually know how to run the government and care about doing a good job running the government and know how to work with our allies and who will always put the American people's interests above their own. Each of our candidates were talented and decent with a track record of accomplishment, smart ideas, and serious visions for the future. And that's certainly true of the candidate who made it farther than any other, Bernie Sanders. Bernie's an American original, a man who has devoted his life to giving voice to working people's hopes, dreams, and frustrations. He and I haven't always agreed on everything, but we've always shared a conviction that we have to make America a fairer, more just, more equitable society.
Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci apparently has been falling out of favor with President Trump for contradicting the president's rosy view of the government's response to the pandemic. Deflating the president again Tuesday, Fauci said Trump's May 1st target for restarting the economy is overly optimistic. Fauci, head of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said public health officials must be able to test for the virus quickly, isolate new cases, and track down new infections before easing social distancing restrictions. Trump has floated May 1st as a possible date to start reopening some areas, but he's getting pushback. On Monday, New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo hailed the worst was over, but warned there was no easy return to business as usual. Several states have banded together on both coasts to coordinate a return to normalcy, but that move stirred Trump's ire, prompting his claim that ultimate power flows from the White House.
President, just to clarify your understanding of your authority vis-a-vis governors, just to be very specific. For instance, if a governor issued a stay-at-home
order... When you say my authority, the president's authority...
Right. Not mine, because it's not me. This is when somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total. And that's the way it's got to be.
Total. Your authority is total.
It's total. It's total. And the governors
total.
Know that.
So if
the governor, governors know that. Now you have a couple of bands of excuse me. You have a couple.
Could you rescind that order?
you have a couple of bans of Democrat governors, but they will agree to it. They will agree to it. But the authority of the president of the United States having to do with the subject we're talking about is total.
Reporters were rebuffed by Trump when they asked how his assertion would jibe with the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. A bastion of conservative thought, the amendment reads, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people." In the last century, the 10th Amendment was used to frustrate the federal government's attempts to desegregate buses and other public places, often referred to as states' rights. However, in recent years, the amendment gave hope to states that have legalized marijuana despite federal law prohibiting cannabis. The administration has said it would ignore both the states and Congress and restart marijuana prosecutions as early as next year. But Cuomo, who says he wants to legalize cannabis in New York, wasn't thinking about pot when he said the American people long ago made their views on kings well known.
The statement that he has total authority over the states and the nation cannot go uncorrected. I mean, it's just a factual statement that is factually wrong. 10th Amendment to the Constitution, it's a whole body of case law. I mean, there are many things you can debate in the Constitution because they're ambiguous. This is not one of those things that is ambiguous. So that statement cannot stand. And it's not only violative of the Constitution, it's violative of the very concept of democracy. I mean, this was the first battle. Do we want a king or do we want a president? And we opted for a president. So that statement cannot stand, period.
On Tuesday, Trump seemed to double down on his claims to ultimate authority, tweeting an obscure reference to a 1960s film. He wrote, "Tell the Democrat governors that Mutiny on the Bounty was one of my all-time favorite movies. A good old-fashioned mutiny every now and then is an exciting and invigorating thing to watch, especially when the mutineers need so much from the captain. Too easy." Based on a 1932 novel, the film was remade twice, once in 1935 and again in 1962. In the later version, a cruel ship commander, William Bligh, played by Trevor Howard, explains to Fletcher Christian, played by Marlon Brando, why he had a man whipped for simply telling the truth.
"I'm not advising cruelty or brutality with no purpose. My point is that cruelty with purpose is not cruelty. It's efficiency. But a man will never disobey you. Once he's watched his mate's backbone laid bare, he'll remember those white ribs staring at him. He'll see the flesh jump and hear the whistle of the whip for the rest of his life."
"Well, perhaps you're right, sir. I'd be careful of that teeth if I were you, sir. It has a peculiar smell. I think it's a bit tainted. Then, of course, it's a question of individual taste."
Bligh has been rated as one of America's top fictional villains. The reason Trump made the reference isn't clear. Numerous Republicans have denounced Trump's claim as violating the Constitution, but others have been arguing the coronavirus lockdown is what's unconstitutional. Meanwhile, the Navy said on Tuesday more sailors assigned to the U.S. Navy aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt have been hospitalized due to the coronavirus. Four of the ship's sailors are in the hospital, and one has been placed in an intensive care unit. Another sailor who tested positive on March 30th was found unresponsive. He died of complications on Monday. As of Tuesday, 589 of nearly 5,000 sailors on the carrier had tested positive for the coronavirus. Captain Brett Crozier, the former commanding officer of the aircraft carrier, was relieved of command after his letter warning of an impending crisis on board the ship was leaked to the media. And in non-coronavirus news, an outbreak, this time of deadly tornadoes in the southern U.S., has killed 34 people. The storms claimed lives in at least six states, and the National Weather Service says they found evidence of at least 27 twisters. Hundreds of homes and businesses were damaged or destroyed, and heavy rains caused flooding in some areas. Among the hardest hit was Mississippi, where the state's $3 billion poultry industry took a big hit. Response efforts were complicated by the pandemic, as first responders worked to make rescues and provide shelters that also mitigate the risk of transmission. Reportedly, stay-at-home measures have hindered hurricane preparedness measures, too. And in more national news, several states have resisted the Trump administration's call for social distancing. That was expected to end on May 1st. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is among the governors that have not yet implemented statewide stay-at-home orders. South Dakota has reported a sizable COVID-19 outbreak linked to a meat processing plant in Sioux Falls, recently shut down indefinitely as a result of the outbreak. And a week after a primary election in Wisconsin was held despite an outbreak of the coronavirus, the results have finally been counted. In a race for a hotly contested seat on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court that got national attention after President Trump endorsed the Republican incumbent, the liberal challenger won by a substantial margin. Circuit Judge Jill Karofsky narrowed the court's conservative majority after a tumultuous election that saw missing polling places and long lines. In an unusual victory statement, Karofsky said she wished the election had never been held.
We shouldn't have had an election on Tuesday. And for many, many people, they had to decide between whether or not they were going to risk their own health or the health of people they loved or their lives or the lives of people that they loved in order to vote. It was an untenable decision. But the people of the state of Wisconsin rose up. Anyone who wasn't brought to tears when they were looking at those people in Milwaukee voting on Tuesday and voting in Green Bay on Tuesday just doesn't have a heart. It was unbelievable. The people in the state rose up. They fought through that untenable decision, and they decided that they want to have Supreme Court justices who make decisions based on what the law is, who are not beholden to special interests, who are not partisan. And that's what you're going to have in Justice Jill Karofsky.
Karofsky's victory marked just the second time in more than half a century a challenger has unseated a sitting Supreme Court judge in Wisconsin. Her win over Justice Daniel Kelly will shift conservative control of the court to 4-3 from 5-2. Meanwhile, in Milwaukee, the state's largest city, black people comprise 41% of the city's population, yet they have nearly half of the city's COVID-19 cases, and 44 of the 67 people who have died in the Milwaukee County were black. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. As the grim statistics of the coronavirus pandemic continue to mount, the activist group Release Aging People in Prison Campaign, Parole Preparation Project, had this to say about the fourth death of a New Yorker in prison with COVID-19. Quote, Governor Cuomo has more blood on his hands. These deaths are Cuomo's responsibility because he refuses to act. While he congratulates himself on cable TV, tens of thousands of New Yorkers in the state prison system and their loved ones are left terrified and devastated. Once again, communities of color across New York State are left fearing for their lives and health. The advocates add, it's just a matter of time before Cuomo's prisons become the death camps we and so many others have been warning about. The comments come as former prisoners, family members of prisoners, and advocates held a protest today at the Queensborough Correctional Facility, a prison complex in Long Island City. A handful of advocates ventured out in face masks and rubber gloves, webcasting the event. They say Governor Cuomo has the power to grant clemency to thousands of prisoners at the end of their sentences from prisons where the infection is spreading.
Death camps in New York State, Governor Cuomo, we can't wait. We are standing here in front of Queensborough Correctional Facility, a state prison right here in Long Island City, Queens. Everybody in this prison is within 120 days of release, and the coronavirus is spreading rapidly. New York State must release people. The governor must release everybody in this prison. I am Katie Schaefer. I am the Director of Advocacy and Organizing for the Center for Community Alternatives.
My name is Comrade Don, here today in the capacity of vocal New York staff leader. These men are dying in prisons all over America. But what's different in New York is that the governors in all the other states are releasing prisoners regardless of their crime by the thousands. The reason that is because the medical health care in prison is the lowest and still in the dark ages. In the last 4 years, 50 New York State Department of Correction prisoners have died preventable deaths due to the inadequate medical care that's given by this sad Department of Corrections. Governor Cuomo is aware of it.
Go ahead, Assembly Member Latrice Walker.
Our prisons are dangerous incubators for coronavirus, COVID-19. And it puts not only the people who are incarcerated at risk, but also the employees around and everyone who is in that setting. So we are just asking for basic requests of humanity that since these sentences are almost over, they are virtually over, that we put our politics aside for change and really just state that it's more important for these individuals to be released. Quite frankly, I think we should repurpose that entire building because I don't really see a need for it to begin with.
Up next is Marvin Mayfield from Just Leadership USA, who has spent time in Queensborough Correctional Facility.
The epicenter of the epicenter in New York is not in the hospitals, as some would think. It's in our jails. It's in our prisons. What we're seeing today is unprecedented. The infection rate of COVID-19, it is 7 times higher in jails like Rikers Island and jails throughout our city and state than it is for the general public. Yet the medical treatment that they receive is substandard. During this pandemic, we've been receiving calls from incarcerated individuals with cries for help. Social distancing protocols are impossible to follow in these jails and prisons. One man called and reported that he was put in a cell, and this was on one of our local jails. He's put in a cell directly after someone who was infected vacated it without any sanitizing or cleaning whatsoever. It has been particularly harsh on the Black and Brown community. We have been disproportionately ravaged by COVID-19. And by virtue of the fact that Black and Brown people make up the vast majority of prisoners in New York and throughout the country, we are being slaughtered.
Next up, we have Dr. Bobby Cohen, who has overseen medical health care in prisons across the country.
The New York City Board of Correction called for a release of 2,000 people from the city's jails on March 13th. Today, the population is 1,000 lower, but there are at least 1,000 people that should have been released 1 month ago and are rapidly becoming infected. New York State keeps admitting people to the city's jails and to jails around the state for technical parole violations. Parole knows that in New York City, they are sending people into a jail where 323 persons have tested positive. That's people living in the jails. And many more are positive but have not been tested. For over 15 years, I visited Greenhaven as the federally appointed monitor trying to bring constitutionally adequate basic health care to the men living there. I know, based on these hundreds of visits to prisons and jails, that a crisis is on us. New York State must release as many people as quickly as possible if they want to limit the scope of the catastrophe that's not coming, but is already here. If the governor does not act immediately, many who are old and chronically ill will die.
Our final speaker is Lazara El Monte.
My son's name is James Castro. He's been in quarantine now for a month and a week with no mask, no kind of protection whatsoever. There's no social distancing between the correction officers or the inmates. I ask Governor Cuomo to please have mercy on these inmates and let them go home with their families so they can be quarantined safely. There's no protection. They are not being given masks or gloves. And the facility is not in very clean conditions right now. We're just asking that Governor Cuomo please allow them to go home and be safe with their families. Just have some mercy on these inmates.
At least 2 incarcerated people at Queensborough Correctional Facility have tested positive for the virus, according to news reports. And as the coronavirus pandemic continues to menace New York, advocates say homeless people, some of the most vulnerable, should be taken off the streets and placed in some of the city's tens of thousands of currently vacant hotel rooms. At least 23 homeless people have died due to complications from COVID-19. The housing campaign coordinator of Vocal New York is Joseph Luneman. He says you can't have social distancing in a homeless shelter.
The city has folks in congregate shelters, which are, you know, folks living in rooms, you know, like a dormitory. So there's bunk beds, you know, sometimes 20 as many as 30 people together in a room. So when the CDC first called for active social distancing of more than 6 feet, you know, Vocal, along with safety net activists, Human NYC, Neighbors Together, Picture the Homeless, got together because we knew from the folks that we were working with that that was not going to be possible in these shelters. Where folks sleep are closer than 6 feet. Where folks eat are closer than 6 feet. So this was a really dangerous situation. A lot of folks who live in shelters in New York have additional health concerns. A lot of them are elderly. But we were very, very concerned, still are. The virus, it's allowed to spread through this population, could do a lot of harm.
Have you had reports of COVID and amongst the homeless population right now?
The virus has spread amongst the population. Some folks have died. I'm not going to be able to give you specific numbers. I'm not sure that we know. But certainly, yes, folks from the shelter system and on the street are getting sick, and a few have died from the virus.
There was a report in the news today, people talking about the subways being taken over by homeless people now that people aren't using them. What's happening in the subways?
There's always been a push to try to get folks off the subways and on the streets, but we think that the city is actually potentially doing more harm than good by trying to arresting people or giving people fines and tickets to try to get them off the trains at this moment. What they really need to be doing is offering folks hotel rooms, right? They need to be offering folks places where they can reasonably distance themselves. Some people are leaving the shelter and going onto the street because it's easier to distance from on the street or on the subway than it is in their current shelter placement.
So there's 30,000 hotel rooms that are empty right now because New York is no longer a tourist destination.
There's 100,000 hotel rooms, we estimate, that are empty right now. We're calling on 30,000. We got that number by combining different shelter types where we felt folks would not be able to isolate. So, no, there are some shelters in New York that are SROs. There's over 3,000 people right now who are already being placed in hotels through DHS through the city. The population in the shelter is actually closer to 65,000 on any given night.
Pardon me for jumping into the sensationalism, but are we talking about putting homeless people in the Plaza Hotel and in the Park Hotel and in these famous hotels in Times Square and what have you?
We don't see why not. I mean, look, the DHS already has a process by putting people in hotels. It already has contracts with a lot of hotel owners around the city, and it's not uncommon for folks to spend a few nights in a hotel before they can be placed in a more permanent shelter. We're not calling for anything new. We're not calling for anything that DHS doesn't already do. I'm not sure. I can't speak to the contract system with DHS, like, you know, whether or not they're renting rooms in the plaza. But fundamentally, at its core, in a crisis moment like this, I don't see why we shouldn't be doing that. If the tens of thousands of people who are currently homeless are not given any form of protection from this, this is a really deadly situation, not just for homeless New Yorkers, but for everybody.
There's been resistance to this for the city?
The city is making some good first steps. The 6,000 units is not nothing. It's a good first step. We're disappointed that the mayor is calling it 6,000 when in reality it's more like 2,500 because, again, some people were already in the hotels before we made this demand. The mayor was asked about this. He sort of punted it to Steve Banks and said Banks, who's the commissioner of HRA, is handling hotel placement. This is really a time where we need to see dramatic leadership from the city, and particularly from Mayor de Blasio. And frankly, over the last 10 years of his administration, the number of homeless people in New York has gone up and up and up. Bill de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio, has been extremely misleading about the number of people he's housed and the number of programs that exist to help folks in the shelter situation. The housing crisis has been allowed to grow on his watch, and now we're in a situation where because folks are in the shelter, there's this immediate threat to their health. And we need de Blasio to show the kind of leadership that he has not shown and step up and provide people with ways to keep themselves safe. That's the sort of bottom line.
Right. So the hotels will become homes for the homeless people. It could be for a year or two.
I'm not sure what the CDC guidelines are going to be. You know, I think like this is all changing very quickly and we're learning a lot about this virus on a day-to-day basis. We have not marked specific amounts of time. So the exact timeline is a little unclear. It's based off of, we're trying to base everything off of what the CDC and the World Health Organization are telling us.
Joseph Blumen is the housing campaign coordinator of Vocal New York. And finally, every night at 7 p.m., New Yorkers who have sheltered in place to avoid spreading the coronavirus have been honoring healthcare workers and first responders by hanging out of their windows, clapping, yelling, singing, blowing horns, ringing church bells, and banging on pots and pans.
Thank you.
WBAI has played a major role in popularizing the expression of love for those who have risked everything to help their sick neighbors. WBAI and the news department encourages you all to join in the celebration in these scary times. That's some of the news for Tuesday, April 14, 2020. The news is producer Linda Perry, our engineer, the great Reggie Johnson, who is going to entreat you all to go out to your windows at 7 o'clock and cheer for our health workers. And for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.